welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 14th, 2014. 14 and 14. That's kind of fun. And
oh,
you're listening
fun.
To episode 98. My name is Rob. With me, as usual, as always happens, here's Mr. Jason Slingerland.
Hey.
And as we are wont to do on occasion, we have an extra special guest on the line with us. A gentleman, a scholar, some might say a genius, certainly a prolific game designer himself. We have the creator, the mastermind behind such fantastic things as Pixel Lincoln, Maximum Throwdown, and Storyteller Cards. We have Jason Tagmeyer. Hey, man.
Hey.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us.
This is awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, our pleasure. You have made some fantastic games.
Thanks.
Well, it's true. Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
I should say thank you for making such awesome games. And the hot thing you have right now is you have Storyteller Cards Fantasy going on right now on Kickstarter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, tell us more about that and what that is compared to your original Storyteller Cards.
So the original is basically just a playing card deck designed to inspire creativity. So it's a standard playing card deck with all the standard rank and suit, but it has a whole bunch of other things going on. A big illustration with, you know, a character doing an action with an item in a location. The idea is that you can use these as one illustration to help inspire you, but you could also use the elements individually. So one has like a frying pan. So if you're looking for some sort of item for a story or anything, flip it over and there's an item on every card. As well as all of that, there's icons on the corners which represent like moods, seasons, and letters of the alphabet, colors, and all that stuff. So we did the basic deck of Storyteller Cards and it did really well. And we wanted to kind of take it to the next level and do something a little deeper into a specific area, and we chose fantasy. The artist Campbell White is way into like classic Dungeons and Dragons and things like that. So this was the best case scenario for a theme for him. And for me, it was for the gaming side of everything, it was perfect because there's so many cool options you can do with that. And instead of a mood, a season, and a letter of the alphabet, we changed the icons to be like a D20, a coin on heads or tails, and one that's like combat resolution, kind of a rock, paper, scissors thing. So that was kind of the next evolution of it, and that's where we are now.
That's cool. The art is really spectacular. I mean, if any of our listeners out there aren't gamers, aren't designers, I mean, it's worth picking up just for the artwork alone.
And the artwork is really cool.
It's amazing.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite artists, and I've happened to become friends with him over the years, but he did something called 8-Bit Dreams maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, and it was for like a year, he did a new Nintendo game, like an NES game.
Yeah.
And he did just an illustration based off of it in that style. It was all done in watercolors too, so it was really cool.
Oh, wow.
He sold them too, and I picked up like 10 of them. Like every game that was my favorite NES game, I picked up the originals of and loved it. So he's a cool guy, and he's done a lot of, like, I've given him, you know, draw a, you know, gnome bard with a two-bladed sword and put a candle in there somewhere and make them in a castle, and he turns it into something like ridiculous. So he's got to take a little bit more than just the art credit on it.
That's pretty
cool.
There's
a bunch of design, you know, in what he does.
That's great.
That's really cool.
So now one of the cool things you're doing with the fantasy Storyteller Cards is that you're also putting out like kind of mini games that are packaged in with it. Did you do that with the original as well?
Yeah, we did. Basically, it's like, there is no game. It's just a deck, and you're getting a deck, and that's what the product is. So you're encouraged to make what you want with it or whatever you can do. But along with that, we've kind of gotten in touch with a whole bunch of designers and said, here's the deck, make a cool game for it. And we released them for free as a PDF. And then we did a little, like a short run of printed books for it, which was awesome. The first time around, we had a ton of really cool people. And second time around, we're doing the same thing. couple people came back, and we got a whole bunch of new people, including Jason. And it's really cool. Just each day we're announcing a new game for it, and I'm super excited each time I read one of them.
Yeah, it's super fun.
It's really cool. And it's, the ones I've read so far look really fun. So.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they've been a lot, like, very different, too. It's neat.
Yeah. Well, so what you been playing lately, guys?
I haven't been playing too much, but Tabletop Day was the other day, and my plans kind of fell apart. I stopped at one event, and my kids were semi-cooperative, so I said, you know, let's try to come back, and they just it wasn't going to work out with the kids. So that night, I played a round of Crossmaster Arena with my wife. I don't know if you guys have seen that or played it.
I heard of it.
Heard of it. Yep. Haven't tried.
It's like a painted miniatures, semi-abstract game. You know, a grid board. Kind of reminds me of HeroScape. Without the modular components, with just a straight board, it's really simple, and there's a lot of cool details in the card, but it's just a battle game, and it's the best thing about this game is the rule book. The rule book is like a tutorial, where the first page you it teaches you just how to move, and you play with two of the figures right on the rule book, and just learn how to move and like basic attacks. And instead of using a card that has like every single ability on the card, it has like a modified version of the card that just shows the movement and attack. Then you flip over the next page and play like a full game with the movements, attacks, and a special, you know, special ability. And then you start learning more and more. There's like six pages like this where each one is a full, probably like 20-30 minute game, and it introduces a new mechanic. And you know, after 3 hours, you've played through the whole rule book, and you've also played the game for 3 hours, which is awesome. Wow, so cool. It's like the best learning experience I've ever had playing a game, and really inspiring, like in trying to figure out like new ways to teach games.
That's cool.
Cool. Yeah, super cool.
And that's pretty much it. That was my tabletop day. It was kind of a bust. I did win in Crossmaster, though.
Cool.
I didn't do much for tabletop day either. Mm-hmm. We had a busy day, but the day before that, we hung out with a couple of my friends, Steve and Jessica from Gita Games, and we got to play a couple of games. We played. They're really big fans of King of Tokyo, which I mean, I'm a really big fan of that game too. But they had only played it a couple times, and they wanted to play it, so I brought it over and we played that, and we had a lot of fun with that game. And then I introduced him to Hanabi, which, as you know, I'm totally gaga for.
Yeah.
And they had never played it before, but I knew they were the type of people that would get it. Because I feel like with a game like Hanabi, there are people that get it, and there are people that just, it's not their game.
Yeah.
You know? And you had actually talked about that with different people, how it's not always, you know, not always interesting to everyone, but they loved it. And we did really well. And
cool.
You know, we're going to try it again. So that was fun. Have you been playing anything?
Yeah, I went to our local game store on Tabletop Day to just kind of scope out what was happening. And they were playing a lot of stuff. It was pretty packed, actually. I was impressed.
That's awesome.
There were a ton of people there. So I didn't stick around to get into a game because it looked like there was a lot going on and not a lot of room. So I would have had to wait around for a bit. I ended up waiting around a bit anyway because I was looking at comic books. So I bought a bunch of comic books.
there's a day for that,
yeah,
too.
Right.
It's called Comic Book
Day. I know. but yeah, so I went home. But I've been playing Threes. Do you guys know Threes?
No.
The app?
Yeah, the iPhone game.
I have the cat version that was free.
Oh, okay. The weird clone. Yeah. Okay.
I just wanted to try it and see what it was like. And I was like, this is cool, but I feel like the cat version probably doesn't do things as well. So I definitely need to get the actual version.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a gazillion clones. I saw somebody tweeted a news story or a blog article or something about all the crazy clones and ripoffs of that game.
It's crazy. Yeah. There's a ton.
Yeah. But I've been playing the original, and it's super fun. I really digging it a lot. It's just about sliding tiles around to add like numbers together to get the highest score you possibly can get.
Oh, wait. Is that like 2048?
2048 is a ripoff of Threes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just downloaded that and started playing it recently, too.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I can't quit playing it.
What I understand about 2048 is that it breaks a lot of the rules of the original game, so you get to a super high score super fast, and the original is not about that. It's a lot more strategic and careful.
I've heard that with the computer version, but I mean, like on the app version, my high score is like 7,000 or something.
Oh, well, I'm playing the original, and I'm struggling to break 3,500 points.
Oh, maybe you're just bad at it, though.
Well, I'm bad at some games, but...
I'm interested in the fact that there's a cat version of this game.
Anyway, I highly recommend the original. It's great. I'm really, really enjoying that. Playing the crap out of it.
I'm a little bummed because that 2048 version has a bunch of crazy ads in it, and they're like double stacked ads.
Well, yeah.
So I bought the remove ads. I think it was $90. Yeah, didn't remove all the ads.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the original is, I think, $299, and there's no ads or anything.
I might have to buy that version. Yeah,
it's good. It's good. I highly recommend it. But I also, you know, one thing that I always find really cool about iPhone games or, you know, or touch games are just the simplicity of the interface and how they can do some really cool stuff with really a really simple mechanic of moving your finger. And I often find that very inspiring to think about as translating into a tabletop kind of thing, you know?
Tabletop game, tie your hand behind your back, wear a glove with just one finger sticking out, and that's all you can use.
Sure. Why not?
I have a game that kind of plays weird with your hands that kind of fits in that whole space. It's like it's called Deck Swing that I made. And it's basically just a kind of a ripoff of, you know, Star Wars X-Wing. But you have these little hex tiles and each one is associated with one of your fingers. So I'm trying to explain this. you got to put your thumb onto one of them and one of the other fingers that matches the number on the other tile and touch that, leaving your thumb as an anchor and then moving the other one around its axis around the thumb. And that's the way you would move your ships around. And then you can like pinch them together and pull them together to kind of like build up on shields and things like that. But it's just this weird, awkward hand movement mechanic that I don't think anybody would like, but I think it's really cool.
I think it sounds great.
I would try that game. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
And the way it would start out is you have to high five the person you're playing against, and whoever has the smaller hand gets to get first dibs on everything because they have a disadvantage during the game.
That's great.
That's a good point. Wow.
Yeah. It's neat. It's weird. And, sometimes if you lose your 1, 2, and 3 ship, if you look at your hand, you lose your thumb and your first two fingers. You're down to just your pinky and the one next to it, whatever
the
it's called.
Finger, yeah.
Thank you. And you're trying to move your ships by coordinating with your least coordinated fingers. So.
Oh, that would be really difficult. Yeah, I'm crazy. Trying this on the desktop here.
Just
but good news, Rob, a game you could probably beat your wife at.
Yeah, she has tiny hands. Tiny
hands. So she'd go first, but you would destroy her after
right.
that.
I was testing it with my daughter, who, you know, right, half the size of mine.
Yeah.
So I just gave her all the awesome cards.
That's cool. No, I totally want to play that.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
I totally want to finish it.
It's like... You should do that.
Okay. Well, the next thing that we always do on this stupid thing that we do every week is that we talk about a feature of the week. And as a guest, one of your jobs this week is to bring a feature for us to discuss. So what do you have for us tonight?
So what I thought about was what I would call non-standard components. And what I mean by non-standard, I would mean not something that's specifically manufactured for a game. So not standard dice or not standard pawns or miniatures or anything like that. Something that's a little bit outside of the norm and probably more relevant in... like indie publishing or even in self-publishing or just in smaller, usually in a smaller arena, but some have broken through to a bigger arena. So non-standard components, for example, strings in the game String Railways.
Sure.
And things along that line. And I get obsessed with these because I every time I design a game, I think of publishing, and I know sometimes you probably shouldn't do that, but I think of like, how could I get this out there? How could somebody get this out there? And a lot of times when I'm thinking, how can I get this out there? I'm looking for little ways that I can make an impact without having to go, you know, to China and do a 2000 run, something I can do that's within my reach. And then weird things like string or business card stock or things like that, you know, usually pop into focus at that point.
Yeah. One game that jumps to mind I don't think it's published yet. I've heard about it for a couple of years, though. And I want to say, and again, I don't remember what publisher's working on it, but it's called Swinging Jive Cat Voodoo Lounge.
Oh, yeah, I've played that.
That's out.
And I've heard that you keep score by hanging little plastic monkeys on a martini glass. Is that right?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, that sounds so cool and so bizarre.
That game, I played it at Origins 2 years ago, something like that, with Dave McKenzie. It's a Clever Mojo game.
Yeah.
It's so cool, and I think they're actually getting closer to publishing it now. And just the way the game played was really neat. It's just like your cards were little like drink recipes and things like that. And it was really cool, the presentation of it.
Yeah,
it played well too.
Cool. Yeah. So I mean, that's a good example of a weird component that.
Something you buy at the party supply store.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, we've talked on the show before. Jason, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but I've got a game called Epic Monster Tea Party. And
oh, I did hear about it. Yeah,
okay, yeah. One of the components.
Papercraft tea.
There you go. Yeah, little papercraft teacups. And I've been to the dollar store looking for actual toy plastic teacups, and you know, but on the scale that I'm thinking, I'm going to have to go with the papercraft idea.
Right.
But yeah, but I think that'll help it kind of stand out a little bit, hopefully.
When I go to the dollar store and I see something weird like that, I just buy all of them because I think that it's my last opportunity ever to get this. And if I'm going to do something with it, I have to have a whole ton of them. So I've done that a lot. And I did it just the other day. They had this box of 40 dice for like $3. And it was less than 10 cents a die for six-sided dice. And they were cool, like fluorescent colors. And I was like, that's almost wholesale, if not cheaper. So I bought a whole bunch of boxes of them and got them home, and they were all rejects on the inside. So there's like ones with like seven pips, and there's ones with like crazy like pointed edges and all. And I was like, well, these are going to be cool for something else.
Yeah. I do the same thing at the dollar store, though. I just recently bought like 8 packs of dominoes. Like dominoes that came in these little wooden boxes, and they're smaller dominoes, and I think they're just 6. What do they call that? The highest number it goes to is 6. So it's okay. 0 to 6. There's a name for that. I can't remember what it is though. But yeah, I did that too. Cause I buy a lot of dice. A lot of times you can find packs of dice. You're right. At dollar stores. So yeah. I always pick those up. Cause actually another thing those are nice for is if you have a game that's got dice in it and you need to send it to like a publisher, you can send them the crappy dice that you got from the dollar store and they can, you know, keep those.
They can deal with that.
If they don't like them, they can publish your game and get better dice for you.
There you go. So are there any other games out there that we can think of that have weird components? Like string, crayons, for example, the crayon Rails games. Not to only talk about Rails games.
It's not super weird, but Jungle Ascent has that big, crazy board, right?
It's not that big.
It was bigger, but then it's got the really oddly shaped cardboard pieces.
It does have non-standard cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a very good example. I'm sorry.
Terrible.
The one that comes to mind for me is Bandu, and it's a dexterity game where you're basically just stacking every wooden object you'd normally find in a craft store. So there's like a little wooden egg. There's a little wooden cup. There's all kinds of things like that, and it just looks like someone went into the craft store and just grabbed one of everything and shoved it in a box.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it's an awesome game. So.
So it's just about building a tower out of these weird shaped things?
You're building your own tower.
Oh, okay.
But the everybody builds their own, and what's really cool about it is there's just like a bunch of beans, and the beans are used for bidding. So when it's your turn, you can choose a piece out of the middle, and you can either say that one's for bid to take or for bid to refuse. So you give it to your opponent and you say, I want to bid one, or you pass it to your opponent and you say, this is to refuse. So you give them the worst one ever, which is like probably the egg, because you can't stack anything on top of the egg.
Yeah.
So they give you the egg and you have to take it or bid a bean to refuse it. And if you bid a bean to refuse it, the next person has to bid, either they have to bid one or I think it might go up at that point. But you only play with 5 or 6 beans for the entire game.
Oh.
So if you get ahead in the bean count, you're just forcing people to take the terrible, terrible. So without that mechanic, it's just like a silly stacking game. But being ahead in the bean count in Bandu is like That's my jam.
Cool. Another one that I really like. I don't, probably you guys have never heard of it, but it's called Jumpin' Monkeys.
Sounds familiar, or just the term, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really terrible little kids game, and it's a big. Basically, you have a big plastic tree that you put together. It's a big tree trunk, and it's got like two levels of leaves with a bunch of holes in it. It's all plastic, and then you have these little plastic monkeys that you put on a catapult, and you flick the catapult and launch the monkeys into the air, and they have, you know, barrel of monkey style arms, so they try and hook on the branches of the leaves of the tree, and you're trying to get to be the first one to get all your monkeys hanging up there, but they hang pretty precariously, and so you can try and knock each other's monkeys down. It's a little kid's game, but I mean, if you've had a few beers with your buddies, it can get pretty nasty. Yeah, so anyway.
You were like talking about custom packaging.
Okay, so custom packaging. With like low-level published games, you know, self-published games and things like that, packaging is just probably the most expensive part of it in putting it together. Just getting a box for your game is super expensive, as you guys have probably seen with print-on-demand and things like that.
Yeah, totally.
So,
yeah,
so it's always cool for me to look into like different ways to package a game. A couple of years ago, I did a game on Kickstarter like forever ago, and all I needed to do was package it. I had all the components together, and I just couldn't afford the packaging. So the box that I used wound up being like one of the little cardboard boxes you would see like chocolates come in, like a gift box kind of. And they couldn't print on the whole thing, but they did like a foil like imprint on the top. So it's just this cool little, almost like a chocolate gift box with a foil imprint, and they wound up costing me like $200 for like 300 or 400 boxes of those boxes, and it was just this weird like non-conventional packaging. It didn't hold up well because it was real flimsy, but it had that flair to it that it looked it looked semi-professional because it was a printed full product, but it was different. Another one that I've seen recently was. There was a game on Kickstarter called Bear vs. Gorilla vs. CEO vs. Hippie. And I know about it because the guys were local, and I don't know who they are, but I know people who know them. And they gave me a copy of the game, and it's in like a almost like a Capri Sun style like aluminum Ziploc.
Whoa.
Like it's really weird. Like it's like a Ziploc that seals at the top, and you know, you can peel the seal off, and then it's a Ziploc underneath for forever. Hmm. But it's that like silver
silver pouch.
Yeah, it was really neat, and it's just like it's different like on the game shelf and everything, but if you have to package your game, it's a neat way to do it.
Bananagrams cool. is that way, the custom little banana bag.
Yep. Well, I was thinking too, like Jason Katarski's Frog Flip.
Yeah.
That comes in a little canvas bag. And my assumption on that was because that was a lot cheaper than doing like, because I mean, it's a micro game, right? So like a box for that, those are kind of tough. I mean, think of like Love Letter. The box for Love Letter is ridiculous. It's bigger than the box for Water Balloon Washout.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got like way less cards, obviously. So.
And with Frog Flip, it's not even a printed bag. The printing is on a button that's pinned onto it.
Right. That was super clever. That was super clever.
It's awesome. You could, first of all, it gives you the title right on there, and second of all, you could take it off and pin it on yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an awesome example of non-conventional.
Yeah. Now that puts me in mind, and this might be a little off topic, but when you're talking about the thing you did in the little chocolate box, like I backed a game, one of the first ones I ever backed on Kickstarter was called Barons of Tea. And when he sent that out, he did the kind of same thing where he put it in a muslin bag that were clearly handmade and had a little screen printing of the logo on the front, but everything was very, very handmade. And I don't know if you guys have an opinion about that kind of more crafty style game versus a short run independent publisher or self published kind of thing. I don't know how you feel about that.
For me, it's just where it's coming from. You know, if I'm anticipating that, then it's cool. If I'm anticipating something that's going to look real polished and you get that, it's kind of a letdown.
Yeah.
So I agree.
And I think there's certain types of projects that lend themselves to the crafty type. Yeah.
Well, and I know you had said, too, about Barons of Tea, Rob, that, and I think this was a good summarization kind of what Jason just said, too, which is that game was a game, but it was more of an art project
than
a game.
It was, kind of, yeah.
Not to take anything away from the actual game, but, I mean, right. the way it was designed and made...
The whole presentation of it was sort of like an art project.
Right. Yeah. So, and I think as long as you're clear about that, that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, but you have to be clear about that because, like Jason said, if you're expecting a very polished-looking game,
right.
and then you get something that looks like that, you might not be happy with that.
Right.
So, and if we know anything, I mean, Kickstarter backers will be very honest with you about their opinion about yeah. the game.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, that you know, that's cool. That this is making me want to kind of think more about weird components and unusual ways to use things. It's kind of a fun idea.
There's the I don't know what they call it. Is it the Tokyo Game Show? There's actually a name for it. I don't know if it's a Tokyo Game Show or something like that. There's an actual name for the event, but it's a huge event in Japan, and there's I believe. Everybody does like self-publishing. They'll make like 100 copies of their game, bring it to the Tokyo Game Show, if that's even the name of the event. I can't remember. which I think that might be it.
It sounds good.
But they bring their game there, basically sell it out, and that's just the mindset over there. It's you know, instead of the big publishers, everybody just makes it themselves. And I think there's a lot of that over there where things are done. You know, just however you can get to 100 copies just to get it there. And it would be really cool if there was anything like that over here, because that's kind of, you know, it's not very well accepted over here.
Yeah.
I think if you went to Gen Con and you had a bunch of handmade games, unless you were like super crafty and artsy, I think people would just, you know, walk right past you.
Yeah, like that stuff works for you know, one-off or short-run bonuses or extra backer bonuses or things or special prizes, but for the full production run, people expect a real, and generally, they expect a full quality, published, polished product.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought, though, that I wonder if there is a market for super short-run, handmade projects that are more like art projects than... mass market games. I wonder if there's an...
What'd be super interesting about that is to do that on Kickstarter, right? Do a Kickstarter for not a ton of money, but for a game. If the game is super... Because think about like the games that have published on Kickstarter and then not went anywhere after that, and the games that have been popular and they're hard to get a hold of, and people will pay a lot of money for those on eBay. It'd be interesting to see that happen, these like art crafty games.
Yeah. Like to use Monster Tea Party as an example. I mean, if I wanted to do that with that... I could, you know, there's 5 bags in the game. One of them is the teapot, so I could have a custom sewn bag that's kind of shaped like a teapot, and every player gets their own small bag that's like supposed to be their monster's stomach. So maybe they could be all pink bags that are circular like a stomach, and actually then put real plastic teacups in them and that kind of thing, and make it into kind of an art project.
I wish there was more of that. I love that. It's...
Yeah. That's neat. That's a neat thing to think about.
That is.
Yeah.
I have, I'm doing a project with, Alex Strang. He's one of the, we actually did his storyteller, game today was our big update. He's a guy from Philadelphia, a designer who, he's got a lot of outside the box thinking. He does a lot of, like team building games, like for his day job, and he'll go do like a 1,000-person version of, you know, rock, paper, scissors or something. Just like weird, crazy things that I don't even understand. Like, I don't even understand who's doing this, but it's like big corporate events, and he'll go and bring like slot cars there, and you know, people stop working and play with slot cars all day. So, he came up with, he's got this game called Movie Plots, where it's just 13 cards or 12 cards. Basically telling the story of a movie with all these cards that come out and just say, make the plot more risque or something like that. And me and him are going to do it together under Button Shy later this year. But it's just 12 or 13 cards. So how do you package like 12 or 13 cards? If you put it in a tuck box, it's going to fall apart. It's going to be like really, really thin. If you put it in a Ziploc, it's kind of lame. So I looked into all different options, and a couple that were that stood out to me was there's a company that does like printed Ziplocs where you can print a full color image right on the front and back of it.
Oh, cool.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. The second one was there's a company that prints on envelopes, and you could get like the Clue style envelopes or something like that, print full color on the front and back of the envelope. But what we went with was a company that prints folded vinyl wallets, and you open it up, and it's just got two. It just folds in half, and on the inside it's just clear vinyl, so you can see the cards underneath. And on the outside, they do like a just a one color print. So we're gonna do like the logo and things like that. But I thought it was perfect for this little tiny 12 card game. Was a little tiny wallet that you can take it with you.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah, I like that.
Because with if it's in a Ziploc, it just has no portability. I mean, you could throw it in a bag and things like that, but I wanted to give it that little bit of durability and portability at the same time.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really I worry about a Ziploc getting knocked around too much. Huh.
I know we were going to come up with some silly name for it, like the pocket games or something like that.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool. Right on. Well, we should move on.
Yes.
It's time for Practicing the Pitch, and you brought a game to pitch tonight, right?
Yes, I did. I'm kind of pitching it to myself while I pitch it to you guys.
So. Okay, fair enough. We've done that before. Yeah.
I actually have a prototype of it, but it's like taken a whole bunch of twists and turns, but the base idea has always been the same. So it's kind of in the style of what we've been talking about, and it's very arts and craftsy, and that's kind of why I wanted to see what you guys thought about that kind of thing. I'm just reading my notes real quick.
Sure.
Oh, we're used to that. That's okay.
Yeah.
I think I wrote it better than I can say it. But basically, it doesn't have a title. It's just all about sock monkeys. And
I love sock monkeys, man. Awesome. I have a book of portraits of sock monkeys, and it's great.
I can tell you where this all started, but I was going to do an app about sock monkeys, and this guy, Ive Sarasek, that I know, did all the art for the app, and we wound up kind of scrapping the app, and I have all this art, and I'm like, we got to make a game about sock monkeys, like a card game or board game. So I have all the art for this game before I had a single thing written down. And awesome. It's awesome art. He's a really good, he's a comic illustrator in Australia, so... Anyway, so the concept is you are a giant living in the land of creation, and you have the power to create sock monkeys using your bare hands. You must build a network of sock monkeys to take out the evil cat dragon before it's too late. So
I'm sold already.
I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but the idea is you're a giant living in the land of creation. Basically, you're a person sitting at a craft table.
Okay.
You have the power to create sock monkeys using your bare hands. You're just making them... with your crafts.
Yeah.
You must build a network of sock monkeys to take out the evil cat dragon before it's too late. And the whole concept is you're working on your craft table and there's a cat constantly stealing your socks. So it's this surreal other world thing going on. But the crafty side to it is I want to put standard craft pieces into the game, to the extent that I wanted you to open the box and there'd be one of those like plastic bead organizer things as you to replace the insert in the box. So
cool.
I want it to be like super crafty, and in that bead organizer are strings, buttons, socks, and things like that. So the way the game plays is and I kind of wanted to bring this on here because I talked to Jason about it before. It's a little similar to I had a game similar to what he's doing for the Storyteller cards, where you're placing things on the table and the location matters and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you play the game is you're trying to gain sock monkeys. Sock monkeys are on cards, and they basically have a recipe of buttons that you need to create them. So you need two blue buttons and a red button to make the Batman-style sock monkey. And the Batman-style sock monkey allows you some really cool superpowers in the course of the game. So you're gathering cards and you're gathering buttons to fulfill the requirements on these cards. The way you get buttons is it's pulled from the bag, but the bag is a sock. And on your turn, I have actually the turn on here as well. On your turn, you are you can take two buttons from the bag and then take one action. And the actions are spend your buttons, activate a monkey, place or move a string, and I'll get into that in a second, and then place a monkey. So what happens is you take your buttons from the bag and they kind of sit in front of you. And if anybody pulls the cat button from the bag, before you cash in your buttons, all the buttons have to go back to the bag. So it's kind of a little bit of a press your luck. How long do you want to hold out before you start spending them? And then what you're doing with your monkeys is you're putting them on the table and then connecting them with these pieces of string that you're buying. You start out with some short string, but then you can buy really long ones. And by connecting monkeys to each other, you're able to activate the abilities on them. And it's a little bit of a social network, which is kind of like Jason's game, where the more you have connected, the more you can do. And the ultimate end game goal is there's a cat that's out on the table, and you're trying to get enough monkeys strung together to surround that cat with the requirements to defeat the cat. So that's kind of the gist of it. And the part that I didn't get into is that when you're placing these on the table and you see the strings you have and the strings your opponent has, you can place them anywhere on the table. So I can place one that's like directly next to yours that's going to make it more difficult for you to string it to your next monkey because you can't go across mine. So you have to take like another route around mine. And there's certain things that allow me to kind of jump onto your monkeys and use their powers as well. So it's this weird table thing going on. Lots of, craft flair to it. And you're trying to trap the cat.
I like it. So the buttons, when you draw them out of the sock, we're talking about actual buttons, right?
Buttons like shirt buttons. Yeah.
Not like chipboard that's printed to look like buttons. You want actual buttons.
Exactly.
Okay. So are the buttons different sizes and shapes and things?
They're all the same size.
They are.
Just different colors.
Different colors. All right.
But I had a couple buttons in there that were larger and they would do certain effects. So you could feel around to pull out that big button if you wanted to enable something.
Okay.
And there was a black one and a white one. And when you pulled out the black one, it was bad and the white one was good, but it was a 50-50 chance. If you wanted to go for the big button.
Got it.
I mean, I'm a fan of buttons in games because I had that game I was working on that had buttons, so I think the buttons are awesome.
Yeah, I know. I've been working on this. I heard you saying that. I was like, oh, man.
But no, that's – oh, man, I dig it. Like, I'm just trying to think of – there's so much going on.
So
that's kind of the thing is there's a lot – like to it, and who is the prime market for this? And I'm trying to think, and I'm thinking of like people who are into crafting and all. So I got to think: is there a lot of crossover between that and gaming? Do I need to kind of take a step back and make it a little more accessible? At this point, it sounds less accessible than it is. It's a little more basic than my description, but that's kind of like where do I go with it? You know.
So are the monkeys laid out on the table in advance, or are you? You choose to lay them out.
They're in a deck that's pretty much face down. You start out with a couple.
Right. Okay.
And then you're working on getting them out of the deck, and then you gotta
by drawing the right colored button combos.
Yeah. So you can place a monkey on the table for your action, but you can't activate it until you have the button combo.
Okay. And you can place them anywhere on the table that you want.
Anywhere. I can surround your stuff.
All right. But if my opponent can activate him before I can, that means he gets to connect his string to it.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And you can, like, the buttons that people have are, you can see them all. So you know, it's not like somebody's holding, you know, six red buttons and you don't know. Everything's out in the open because when that cat attacks, basically, all the buttons go back to the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there's certain monkeys, like some of the powers that I had written down was like some just store buttons and protect them. So, you know, to activate this monkey, it allows me to store buttons on top of him that are unable to be stolen when the cat comes out. And
that
like
makes
that.
Sense. Keeps them safe.
Yeah. that should be the Batman monkey.
Yeah, he protects not non-lethally.
There really is a Batman monkey, and it's the only one that I can ever think of. But he seriously made like 200 different sock monkeys. It's crazy.
Oh, holy crap.
Wow.
Because it was like an avatar builder, so you got to take it and choose the eyes you wanted, the nose you wanted, the outfit, the, you know, the hat.
Nice. That's cool.
It's really neat.
All right, so... let's think. See if we can come up with a name for this.
All I got is you're a giant living in the land of creation. You have the power to create sock monkeys. Use your bare hands. Build a network to take out the evil cat dragon before it's too late.
Okay, that's the scenario.
That's what I got.
It's something with socks. Sock monkeys. Sock.
I picture the box being. Like the box, the fonts, everything looking like fabric, you know, like just when you see like somebody's, you know, collection of just fabric that they're using to make some crafts out of. I picture everything having that soft, pillowy, fabric-y look to it.
Yeah, sort of patchwork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps.
Sure. You could, patchwork monkeys, patchwork.
Oh, patchwork and network and
yeah,
got something going there.
Patchwork
network. Monkeys. I've never thought of a name. I haven't even thought of it at all. I just keep writing sock monkeys and
yeah.
I put a Z at the end. Sock monkeys with a Z.
Oh well, that's right. It. There
I think
is.
You have a name.
Yeah. Add a Z and it's an instant winner.
Maybe after sock monkeys with a Z, put LOLZ as well.
Sock monkeys lols.
Yeah.
I think
you got it.
LOL monkeys.
LOL monkeys. There you go. With a Z. Z monkeys.
Can I pitch it to Z Man and call it the Z Mankeys?
Oh, nice.
But then it's a Pokemon because there's a Pokemon named Mankey.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, this can go forever.
We should probably stop.
Z-Mankeys it is.
Z-Mankeys, okay. Right on, cool. I dig it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, yeah. I like that it's not just buttons and land cards connecting. I like that you have the strings to actually show the connections between the things. I think that's going to be a key part of it.
Yeah, the hard part is going to be, so, you know, you can move the cat around as well, and getting the cat close to your monkeys and then surrounding the cat is just your key to victory. But you have to have, say the cat has it's 10. It requires the value of 10 with your monkeys, whether it's on them or 10 monkeys total, to surround that and you know, end the game. So, yeah, moving them around, getting the bigger strings, all that stuff is going to be a big part of it.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool. Well, I think that's probably going to wrap us up here for tonight. We want to make sure we give you the chance to plug anything else you want to plug. Tell us how people – or tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can find Storyteller Cards and your Kickstarter. Give us all that stuff.
On Twitter, Jay Tagmeyer. From there, you'll find everything else. Just the letter J and then Tagmire, T-A-G-M-I-R-E. Storyteller Cards is on Kickstarter till April 24th. And it's Storyteller Cards Fantasy, I should say. And there are so many cool games coming out from lots of cool people that, you know, don't miss it. It's really cool. Super cheap, too. It's $10 for a deck of cards. And you get the games for free as an add-on PDF. And it's you know, it's good for anybody. The first deck, the Storyteller Cards, are available at storytellercards.com, and there's a book full of games for that too. So it's just kind of, it's not just me, it's everybody, and it's a product designed to help people. So
I think it's the most exciting thing about that is that it's not just a game, it's a tool.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's super cool.
I was calling it a pocket-sized creative toolkit for gamers, role players, writers, etc.
Yeah, that's great. Cool. That's super
cool. I just took them in my pocket today to my daughter's school. You have to go once a year to talk to the class and read them a book. And I said, let me bring in the storyteller cards because that's like her favorite thing ever. And I had it in my pocket. So.
That's cool.
Nice.
Well, thanks again, Jason. We really appreciate you hanging out with us tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This is fun.
Yeah, it was good times.
Yeah, and thanks everybody out there in the internet world for listening to Building the Game. We super, super appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerlin, and I am @poorly_design. And, of course, our lovely guest is @JTagmeyer. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and you can make sure we're going to get the store page up pretty soon on the website for picking up your own copy of Water Balloon Washout.
Might actually be up right now.
Hopefully very, very soon, if not already. Also a good link in there to Rumplebum on GameCrafter if you want to check that out. And you can come on back every week and hang out with us over and over again, and we hope that you do that. Oh, I also want to give one more plug out to the Tabletop Deathmatch. Last week, the first episode aired with our friend Paul Sang and his game Outer Earth. The next game coming up this week is going to be Jupiter Deep, so look forward to that. Check out the Tabletop Deathmatch at tabletopdeathmatch.com. And let me know what you think. My episode's going to air on May 6th, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Cool.
Yeah. So anyway, Jason, thanks again, man. Super appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. It's cool. Yep.
Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Cool.
So what is your role in the deathmatch?
I pitched a game called Rocket Wreckers.
Are you in the 16?
Yeah, he was one of the 16. I'm one of the 16.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know one group that's in there. Was it Installation 44 or something like that?
42, I want to say. Yeah,
something like that.
I got to know them fairly well. They seem like a good group of people.
We did it was me, TC Petty, and John Moeller. We were the judges for the Philly Game Jam, and we picked them as the winner
cool.
two, three years ago. Yeah, cool. It was fun. It was, and they made it that weekend. We didn't even believe it. We thought maybe, you know, they brought it. It was already, you know, it was a 24-hour jam, and they came up with the whole game. And we thought they came with it because it was just that good.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a deck builder, right?
Yeah, it was a deck builder with just, like, laid out on a little board grid.
Yeah.
It was cool.
Cool, right on. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of really cool stuff in that. I got to meet and kind of spend some time with about half the finalists. I still haven't played any of the games other than mine, of course, but I got to look at a bunch of them. And I think there are some real gems in there.
Cool.
Yeah. Mine might not be among them, but some of the other ones look pretty good.